This podcast is brought to you in partnership with BNP Paribas Real Estate, the real estate advisor for a changing world.
Right, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to this EG session entitled Smart Cities Cracked. I'm Damien Wild, editor of EG. It marks the launch of our London Investor Guide, so don't go home without one of those. And please note the new branding as well. EG now, not those previous words, which I'm not allowed to say anymore. So we hear so much about smart cities, but perhaps we don't scratch beneath the surface often enough. What does it take to make a smart city? And does it really matter to investors and communities alike? And perhaps a headline question of all, given our surroundings, inside the tent, not outside it, is London a smart city? We have an expert panel here to help us get to the bottom of this topic, as you would expect. On my far left is John Slade, Chief Executive of BNP Paribas Real Estate. Next to him is Mark Davey, founder of Future City. Then Catherine McGuinness, Deputy Chairman of the Policy and Resources Committee at the City of London. Jackie Newstead, who's Global Head of Real Estate at Hogan Lovells International. Chris Lewis, our Head of Transaction Support at LaSalle Investment Management. And on my left, Andrew Crichton, Head of Direct Property for Europe at Aberdeen Asset Management. So let's start with that headline question. And John, I'll start with you. Is London a smart city?
Right, thank you for that curveball, Damien, on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm not actually quite sure, even though I've got copious notes, what the definition of a smart city is. I think that all cities have got to try and stay ahead and adapt to what's going on. They've got to try and keep in the lead. They've got to be attractive. They've got to have good transport. I wrote down four words here: environment, transport, connectivity, data, but you've got to use the data, and best place to live. And then I tried to bring them down to two, which is urbanization. You've got to have an urban environment where people want to live and come to and work in, and digitalization. You have to live life the digital way in a city. Yes, London is a smart city. It's really got to keep working to keep ahead.
Okay, so John's boiled it down to two words, urbanization and digitalization. Mark, for you, what defines a smart city?
I think for us, we've been looking at placemaking strategies across London, and for me, it's all about programmable space. It's about London almost as a programmable box. You know, as we increasingly see culture and creativity as one of the big driving forces for London's identity, it's the idea that public realm works in a number of ways. It encourages activation, nighttime economy. It's got to be more about coming out of buildings. So I think smart city refers mostly to a kind of techno idea and tends to be around connectivity to do with services. So I would sort of really slightly deflect it into culture, placemaking, London as a cultural city, and the kind of developers now kind of knowing what it is they have to do to actually make it happen. Most of us, it's like resilient city. You know, we hear these terms and we kind of get it, but we don't actually know what we're supposed to do.
Okay, Catherine, you were nodding there, and I don't want to get each of the panel to extend this definition to breaking point, but are there other components that you'd add to those three or four that have been identified?
Well, I think both our previous speakers have made very good points. I mean, to me, it is a very vague term. What do we mean by smart city? For me, it would be a city using modern technology, data, collaboration, innovative thinking to make a city a better place for people, whether that's by using the space better, bringing in culture. So it's, I think, an intelligent way of looking at cities across the piece and using new data and new technology and collaborative thinking.
Okay, and is there a destination here, or is it all about the journey, to use that much maligned word? Catherine, then I'll bring in Jackie.
I think we're on a journey. I think so far as where we are in the City of London, the part of London that I'm involved with, we're fairly smart, but we're getting smarter. We've got work to do. We're looking at how to use data and modern technology to make the place better. And I think two examples I would give you: our safety scheme at Bank, which we're just about to implement, where we've done some very advanced modelling to see how pedestrians and other users were using that space and how to solve a really serious safety problem. It's an incredibly complicated junction where at the height of the rush hour you get 18,000 pedestrians crossing, 70% of them crossing when they shouldn't be. and we're just about to implement a very bold safety measure restricting who can go through that. And that, I think, is a use of new technology and innovative thinking. I'd also pull out our Clean Air app, which we've developed with King's College, which tells you the level of air pollution, encourages you to look for alternative ways of travelling if you need to avoid that. So I think those are just two instances, but there's a lot more that we could be doing and that we are thinking of doing. And obviously, we're a hub of very creative and innovative people around the city. We've got the tech cluster, we've got the bankers, we've got a lot of very... We've got academics. We've got people who we're now getting together and challenging and saying to them, what do you want? What do you think we could do? Could we use our open spaces better? So we're trying to harness the community as well to help us.
Okay, thank you. And Jackie, before Catherine made those points, I was about to say, does this really matter? But from a safety and a clean air point of view, it clearly does matter. So I wonder instead whether, is this something that's happening anyway? Isn't this how cities evolve anyway, and we're just applying a tag to it?
Maybe that's right, because actually one of the key components I see of smart cities is their ability to reinvent themselves. So if you look back at the history of London, it has evolved over time, and it's had to evolve to stay ahead. So I think that's probably right, Damien, that it's a constant journey. It's a journey that never has an end, because unless you keep evolving, you're not going to stay smart. And to stay smart, you need to keep attracting occupiers, both to live and work.
Okay, thank you. And Chris, from an investor point of view, to what extent does this matter? Do you think that you don't make investment decisions, presumably, on whether a city is badged as smart or not?
Well, you say that. What we've found is, particularly at the moment with where we're at in the cycle, the level of geopolitical risk, looking at themes to make more commitment investment decisions, then yes, we do look to smart cities. One of the factors that we add in that's been discussed today actually is people. We've had run an economic regional index for about 17 years now. We've just added human capital to that, which very much links into your point about a city's ability to evolve. So yes, I think we do factor it into our investment decisions, but I'd be wrong to say that it doesn't often confirm what you were thinking already. One of my favourite examples is we've just announced that Cambridge is a very good smart city, but I think we've known that for quite a long time.
Okay, and Andy, smart cities, to what extent do you take them into account when you're making investment decisions?
Yeah, a reasonable amount. I'd just like to add a couple of things. I agree entirely with what John was saying in terms of urbanisation, and that is a key component. Nobody's talked about young people yet, and I think that is crucial to the vibrancy that we see and the intellect that is coming in. So if we're talking about London attracts something like 40% of all graduates that graduate out of British universities at the moment, and at the better universities that is an even higher percentage. And they are the future. We keep talking about the evolution of smart cities. We can talk about the Cambridges of the world, but London is so dominant when it brings in new people, and they're the future. So do we take it into account? Yes, of course we do, because these are the people that are going to be there for the next two decades.
Okay, and what's your definition then in a practical investing sense? What are you looking for? All of the boxes we've mentioned to be ticked?
Well, we still have to look at the boring rents and yields, I'm afraid. We still have to do that. It's just looking at the overall, what is happening. And I agree entirely with what Jackie was saying in terms of London and its ability to reinvent itself. So you've got to try and look into the future and say, what is this place going to be like in a few years' time? Is there a sense of place? And is it something, because we're always looking to invest into the long term. So we don't want to be, buying and selling very quickly in these places. We want to invest over a long period of time. So we've got to be sure that whatever happens in that location is going to be there and is good for its tenants and its occupiers.
Okay, thank you. Mark?
I thought I need to draw attention to, again, to London, particularly about the change of London. You're beginning to see
what I would call a series of creative districts. You know, if you look at White City, Greenwich Peninsula, Barking Riverside, Wembley Park, you're seeing these huge regeneration areas, and you're often using culture and creativity as a kind of driving force. And with that comes a great opportunity for us smart ideas. And I think, that, again, that's what's lacking at the moment is visionary ideas that developers particularly can sort of say, we'll have that. That's something we'll introduce, and we'll bring it in through our architecture, infrastructure landscape. A good example, I think, of a really interesting smart city initiative is the Illuminated River project, to take the 17 bridges along the Thames and then light them to create this extraordinary artwork for London that you can see as you fly in. You know, that's using infrastructure, it's imposing on it a different idea, it's bringing in partners, and it's creating the river in a completely different way. So I think we've got to look at big visionary ideas, and we've got to latch them onto some of the big redevelopment opportunities, many of which are here today.
Okay, so, sorry, Catherine, just a moment, but Mark, just to latch onto something you said there, are you saying we won't be a smart city unless we demonstrate more vision and more ambition?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think we are a smart city at the moment. I think, like, the trouble with these big ideas is they're just too vague and too large, and no one can grab them, and we, you know, we're the audience here, you know, very pragmatic people want to get on and do something, want to know what they have to get involved in. So I think I totally agree with the last speaker's point about it being a young city. It's a young city, and it's a millennial city, it's a creative city, and they're coming here to work on, you know, creative technology, fintech, and so on. That's the future. And again, many of you in the audience will know that. But what they also want is a place that's interesting. So there's an opportunity for a smart city to revolve around core creative ideas, I think. And I think there's an appetite by developers to do it. And you're seeing it with Greenwich Peninsula announcing itself as a new cultural district for London. That's come from them. That's not come from government. That's the developers saying they're it. So I see the opportunity, and I see it flaring up, but I don't think there's, at the moment, a clear sense. A bit like sustainability or resilience. What does it actually mean?
Okay, thank you. Catherine.
Well, I just wanted to follow that up by saying what I think is really needed is strong leadership, whether that's leadership from the politicians, from the developers, from the investors, taking the long-term view and looking for the bold, innovative, recreated city that we want to see. I think you're right that many of the ideas that are raised are so big that people can't quite grasp them. I think there's also a problem with smart cities that people assume we're just talking about new technology and it has to be something really ahead of the curve and innovative in technological terms. Actually, if you just look at what we've already got and think in a more innovative way, you can make a difference. We're looking at the moment, a problem with the present, with the number of deliveries that come into the city, with people now having their Amazon deliveries or whatever to their offices, and that's really adding to the weight of the traffic on the road. We're looking at innovative solutions to that by getting the deliverers, by getting the big companies and the developers together to talk about what we might do instead, whether it's consolidation centres or different ways of working to avoid that unnecessary congestion.
Okay, thank you. John?
Yeah, Andrew spoke about young people. I have my own story. My daughter is a student. She's in Manchester, Andrew, not London. She's doing a postgrad at Reading. And I hate to say this, she's coming to London to work for CBRE. Oh, that hurts. What it is, though, about London and the major cities, she wrote to me yesterday and said, I've got a question in my exam. What are the best cities to invest in Europe at the moment? And I went, well, Berlin and Paris. And what is it about them? Well, they're wannabe cities. They want to be the best city. They're adjusting themselves. They're moving. But they also want to be in cities where people want to live. So Berlin has that. Paris has that. What they're all doing is they're reinventing themselves. As financial and traditional occupiers are moving out, tech occupiers in London, Apple, Google, Amazon, they're rejuvenating. As some occupiers move out, they have the facilities, they want to invest, and people want to live there. And that's all important. And to my daughter, she's going to come and work in London. Can't account for the firm, but London's where she wants to be, and London wants her to be there.
Thank you, Jackie.
One of the things we were talking about in a panel session this morning about global cities was actually the trend towards cities becoming more mixed use. So you no longer have a defined business district and a defined area where people live. It's being mixed up together. And I think that's one of the other features of smart cities, is that move towards people living and working in close proximity, which helps to avoid some of those congestion issues, which some of the older cities face.
Okay, thank you. And Chris, London's getting smarter, but there are perhaps smarter cities out there. Are we catching up or being left behind?
No, I think London is ahead of the game, actually. It's got the people, as we've talked about. It's where people want to be. People are migrating to London. Even, actually, I think it's a very good example, John's daughter there. You know, Manchester's actually got a very high retention rate of students in comparison to some cities. But actually, there we are, a live example of people wanting to come and work in London.
Okay, Andy.
I mean, I agree with a lot of that. I think we can't have this discussion about London being a smart city without talking about residential and the cost of residential. So when I talk about John's daughter coming to work in central London, it's going to be very, very painful because, A, there isn't the... There isn't sufficient accommodation, and if we want the vibrancy of these cities to remain, we've got to provide affordable accommodation. And London, central London, is not providing that at the moment. That's a real concern.
So we've talked about the forces or the ways in which London might be considered a smart city, but those counter forces are cost of residential. Are there others as well?
That's my number one. There's plenty of panelists, but that's my one.
I think there's another area that's interesting is, you know, as the centre of London becomes so dense and overdeveloped, I heard this expression called superurban, or as opposed to suburban. So this kind of expansion of London out to the edges, out to Enfield and Barking and so on. And the idea that these new urban products, because that's kind of what they have to be, look around for a kind of urban context and it isn't there, and they have to do it themselves. So there's a few things kind of happening in the market, I think, which are beginning to offer opportunities for a smart approach. In new development areas, in new parts of London. The key thing is what we need is almost a series of smart principles. We almost need six things we should be looking at and then stick to six and do them well and try to introduce them through development projects. Again, I think if we could focus on what we understand smart to mean, create the headers and then feed them out to architects, landscape architects and so on, I think we'd begin to see something. The trouble is at the moment it's just too splintered.
And who should create those principles? Where will they come from? How will they be distributed?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because I think at the moment a lot of the creative ideas that are coming out are coming through the private sector. So the market is in a sense, you know, culture is my area and placemaking. So I see a lot of the really exciting initiatives coming through the private sector and development sector as they begin to make places in order to sell and in order to the greater states, the PRS market. It's requiring developers to be more and more aware of the place that they inhabit. So they're being innovative in turn because the market requires it. So I think my instinct is the private sector that probably does it. The problem, as always, is finding some sort of structure that they can work to. So maybe that's the council, but not the councils or the GLA as a solution, but as a guiding force for that.
Okay, thank you. And Catherine, do you look at other cities with envy around the world and think we should be as smart as they are?
I think London both is as smart as many of the rest of the cities in the world and will remain so. It has a fantastic track record of innovating and renewing itself. It's more important than ever that it carries on doing that, and we'll do our bit to make sure it does.
Okay. And Jackie, going back to an earlier point, do you think there are forces that stand in the way of London becoming an even smarter city?
I think one of the potential problems is making sure that we invest enough in our infrastructure. Now, obviously, we've got Crossrail, which is fantastic, but if we don't keep making sure that we keep people moving through our cities, then that's a potential barrier to people actually wanting to come and be there.
Okay. Does anyone else have any views on what might stand in our way, John?
At the risk of being slightly unpopular to my fellow panellists, you know, London is one of a number of world cities, and I think we've really got to bear in mind that those cities are complementary. And when investors, I deal with a lot of international investors who come into London, and they're not just going to come and invest in London. So it pays almost for London and some of the other European cities in particular to get together and try and develop things together and have some commonality. I listened to the mayor of Paris speak about 2 weeks ago, and although Paris sort of wants to take on London for occupiers, on the other hand, they're saying how can they work with London to make themselves complementary to the occupational desires of the financial institutions. So it's great to go for London, it's great to promote London, but there's other cities who are going to go along with us, and to a degree we need to remember we are in competition, but people don't just want to invest in London, they're going to invest all over.
And actually you could add to that cities in the UK as well. It's not just the overseas cities we should be working with, it's some of the others, Manchester you've mentioned.
There's just one other thing actually that comes to mind is also cycling. And I think the idea of London, the way in which we use London is changing, and cycling being one of the big changes. So I think there's opportunities for us to do smart city initiatives around big ideas, and cycling is certainly a big idea, and lends itself very well to, I think, to technology, connectivity, and new ideas.
Okay, I won't get John on cycling.
One more, just in going back to the where we started from in terms of urbanisation and the challenges with, you know, improvements in infrastructure that's required. I mean, London has grown by 1 million people in the last 10 years. So that's, imagine putting 2 Edinburghs into London over 10 years, and the next 10 years is going to be exactly the same. So unless we do something about the infrastructure, this, you know, London will not remain a smart city because it won't be able to move.
I can't resist it, Andrew. You are putting Aberdeen and Edinburgh together, though, aren't you?
No. There's not as many in Aberdeen.
Okay, are there any questions out there?
Hello. It's great to hear everything about London and how successful London is, but how on earth are we going to challenge this appalling issue of air quality, which will actually dissuade people from living in London and working in London unless something is done very, very quickly about it?
Catherine?
Yeah, I think that's a really challenging question. We're working in the City of London Corporation, obviously one of the most polluted parts of London. We've got a number of schemes that we're working on with the mayor. The scheme at Bank, the safety scheme which I mentioned, will also have an improvement on air quality. We've got a low emissions zone coming into the north of the city, where we'll be looking at the vehicles that can come through. But you're absolutely right, it's a major challenge, and we're going to need to take some really bold steps to tackle it.
And you can't do it in isolation. Who should be leading on this?
Well, clearly it has to be a pan-London initiative, and we are working very closely with the mayor.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions? One just down there.
Hello. What about Brexit and the smart city London? Is there going to be an impact?
I'll take that.
Sorry, Chris.
I was touching on earlier, one of the reasons we work very hard with our research at looking at things like smart London, the comment had been made about how real is it, how tangible it is. We actually use that because of things like Brexit, that you can't forecast the political uncertainty to help us make longer term decisions. So we have to look at other things where we're not making forecasts. We're looking at raw data about people, about supply and demand, and then we can make more informed decisions. So I'd like to think that as a smart London strategy, you could push through perhaps some short-term wobbles with Brexit. And actually, maybe Brexit creates enough short-term volatility to move some property around and get it into the right hands for the next cycle.
Yeah, I think investors are still coming to London despite the prospect of Brexit. Will Brexit happen? I think the ability for a city to regenerate itself to be smart is bigger than Brexit. It's probably bigger than the European Union if it's a stable city for investors. And as I said before, the ability for London to regenerate, for new occupiers to come in as old occupiers go out. And also, I really believe there's a trend into urbanisation where people want all the facilities that a city can offer. The people who work for Google want the infrastructure, they want the restaurants, they want to live close by to the office. So I think a smart city is reproducing itself and reinventing itself. And I think that the Brexit and the political issues are going to have a big influence, but it's up to the cities to stride on through that and make sure that they're attracting the people.
And I just briefly, I at the moment we're working in Sydney, Boston, and London on three major projects. So it's interesting to compare the cities. The thing that they're all chasing is this idea of the city of ideas, the cultural city. So it's important that London, it reinvents itself, constantly reinvents itself. So the smart technology element is something it should be embracing as a cause and as a differentiator. So it's all post-Brexit, it's going to be about what London is and anything that can add to its identity and change its kind of vision for the rest of the world has got to be embraced by everyone, I think.
Okay, I'm afraid I've had a signal from the back. So London may not be smart quite yet, but smarter than most and getting smarter. Thank you for your questions, and please do thank the panel.